Chapter 5, continued. Virtual paupers. While work is common to every society, under capitalism, it takes on historically unique qualities. In pre-capitalist societies, work was necessary, but people had shared access to land, subsistence farming, and the necessary means of survival. Peasants were poor but self-sufficient, and survival was not dependent on working for someone else. Capitalism changed all this. Through the process called primitive accumulation, pre-capitalist workers were uprooted from their land and dispossessed of their means of subsistence. Peasants struggled against this and continued to survive on the margins of the emerging capitalist world. And it eventually took violent force and harsh new legal systems to impose wage labor on the population. Peasants, in other words, had to be made into a proletariat. This new figure of the proletariat was defined by its lack of access to the means of production or subsistence, and its requirement for wage labor in order to survive. This means that the proletariat is not just the working class, nor is it defined by an income level, profession, or culture. Rather, the proletariat is simply that group of people who must sell their labor power to live, whether they are employed or not. And the history of capitalism is the history of the world's population being transformed into proletarian existence through the advancing dispossession of the peasantry. With the recent integration of post-communist countries and the rise of China and India, the global proletariat has seen a great doubling, quote-unquote, with 1.5 billion more people now reliant upon waged work for survival. But with the emergence of the proletariat, there also comes a new form of unemployment. In fact, unemployment, as we understand it today, was an invention of capitalism. Having been torn away from their means of subsistence, for the first time in history, a new, quote, surplus population, unquote, emerges that is unable to find wage to work. While capitalism may exploit the employed working class, as Joan Robinson once wrote, quote, the misery of being exploited by capitalists is nothing compared to the misery of not being exploited at all. For the most part, the size of this surplus expands and contracts in tandem with economic cycles. All things being equal, as economies grow, workers are drawn from the surplus and into waged labor. The unemployment level decreases, and the labor market tightens. At a certain point, however, economic demand stalls, wages begin to cut into profitability, or workers become too politically bold. For reasons of profitability, or inflation, or simply to regain political power over the working class, workers are laid off. The surplus subsequently expands, held in reserve for the next cycle of growth. Yet these cyclical mechanisms only partly explain our current situation, particularly given that wage pressures have been stagnant for decades, inflation has remained stable, and the labor movement has been devastated. The cyclical account based on economic demand certainly accounts for the depth of the 2008 crisis, but it does not explain longer-term changes in the labor market, such as the rise in precarity, the emergence of jobless recoveries, and the growth of non-capitalist labor markets. To understand the current conjuncture fully, other tendencies therefore need to be taken into account. These are the mechanisms that produce a secular trend towards a larger and larger surplus population, independently of cyclical boom and bust patterns. It is these that pose the biggest threat to the reproduction of capitalist social relations. Today, the production of surplus populations through technological change has increasingly hypnotized the media's imagination. While this attention has been focused on fears of an imminent job apocalypse carried out by vast armies of robots, technological developments can also make older processes more productive without automation. For example, advances in agriculture. In either case, productivity enhancements mean that capitalism needs less labor to produce the same output. Automation appears as the most imminent threat, however, with estimates suggesting that anything from 47 to 80% of current jobs are likely to be automatable in the next two decades. But estimates based solely on advances in technology are insufficient to predict growing unemployment. After all, despite continually rising productivity, employment has remained relatively stable throughout the history of capitalism. With some painful delays, new jobs have been created to replace those that were lost. Yet sanguinity based on past experiences overlooks the political and contingent basis of this historical record. Government policies, workers' movements, the gendered division of the labor force, and simultaneous reductions in the work week have all played a role in sustaining employment in the past. As a result, additional qualifications are necessary to understand under what conditions technological change will lead to increased unemployment. A first qualification argues that because increased productivity lowers production prices, unemployment only increases when demand fails to grow enough in response to these lower prices. If the cheaper prices spark more sales, the company may expand rather than cut workers. A similar argument suggests that technological developments often create new industries, and that this potentially creates replacement jobs. Since the introduction of the personal computer, for instance, over 1,500 new job types have emerged. In either of these cases, consumers buy more goods, because they are cheaper or new, and others are kept employed. The same logic holds for services. The rollout of ATMs, for example, led to fewer bank tellers being employed in each branch, but banks responded to the cheaper costs by opening more branches and expanding their market share. The result was that the number of bank tellers remained steady, though this may be changing today as banks move their services online. In all of these cases, the logic is that even if technology eliminates some jobs, demand grows sufficiently to create new jobs. In a second situation, technological change reaches such a speed that an increasingly large portion of the population becomes unable to keep up with the skills needed. In this case, even if new demand can be created, there simply are not enough capable workers to take up these jobs. The supply of labor falters. The speed of technological change and diffusion may render entire segments of the population as an obsolete surplus. In a third situation, labor-saving technologies can be of such general use that they diffuse across the entire economy, dampening the overall demand for labor. In this circumstance, even if new industries are created, they will require increasingly less labor because these technologies have a wide range of applicability. If any of the above conditions hold, then technological change can lead to increased unemployment. As we will see, there are good reasons to believe a number of these conditions do hold. But while technological unemployment is the most prominent reason today for swelling surplus populations, it is not the only one. Another mechanism that actively changes the size of the surplus is one we have already noted, primitive accumulation. This is not just an origin story of capitalism, but also an ongoing process that involves the transformation of pre-capitalist subsistence economies into capitalist economies. Through various means, a poor but self-sufficient peasantry is forced off its land and made to rely on wage labor to survive. With globalization, this process has accelerated and led to a doubling of the proletariat. The supply of rural labor that China can draw upon is dwindling, but the integration of Africa and South Asia means the worldwide supply of labor continues to increase at a rapid pace. The outcome of this is a vast new global labor force, dependent upon the creation of equally vast numbers of new jobs. Therefore, independently of any technological changes in capitalist production, surplus population have increased because of this new labor supply. In addition to this, a third mechanism involves the active exclusion of a particular population from capitalist wage labor. Both in the past and present, this has predominantly involved the exclusion of women and racial minorities from the job market. While the problems of slavery, racism, and sexism are not reducible to capitalist imperatives, indeed they have separate logics of domination, these phenomena have also indirectly served capitalist goals. Unfree labor in the form of slavery is well documented as a key element of capitalism's origins, and continues today. And the unpaid labor of many women and racialized prison populations continues to act as a source of hyper-exploitation. On a more modest level, unemployment continues to be distributed unevenly across distinctions of race, gender, and geography. Witness the devastation of post-industrial cities, for instance. Certain groups are more likely to be the last hired during a boom and the first fired during a recession. The vulnerabilities that surplus populations face are therefore differentiated between sexes and races. An economic logic of exploitation and expulsion intersecting with other logics of oppression. But in all of these cases, surplus populations are concentrated within a particular group as a result of political, legal, and social structures. It is not, in other words, technological change or primitive accumulation that is responsible for their difficulties in finding wage labor. But these mechanisms often intersect with each other. Some people are more likely to be affected by technological change, and the incorporation of new surplus populations usually involves racial coding. In a myriad of ways, these mechanisms, technological change, primitive accumulation, and active exclusion, generate an expanding number of proletariat outside the normal workforce. What, then, is the composition of the surplus population today? Broadly, we can divide it into four different strata: the capitalist segment, the non-capitalist segment, the latent segment, and the inactive segment. The first segment we are all familiar with, the unemployed and underemployed, situated within the normal capitalist labor market. This group has access to at least some minimal state welfare, is actively seeking another job, and therefore exerts pressure on the wages of the employed. Yet, for most of the world, being unemployed, quote-unquote, is a relative luxury. In the absence of any social safety net, most people must constantly work to survive, and are therefore forced into creating new subsistence economies alongside capitalism. This is the non-capitalist segment of the surplus population, filled with people who have been dispossessed of their means of subsistence, but have few social safety nets, either community or state-based, to allow them to go without work for long. These subsistence economies produce goods for the market, small trinkets, for example, but they are organized as non-capitalist forms of production, in that they do not seek to accumulate. These types of economies increasingly dominate the labor market of the developing world, ranging from 30 to 80% of the working population in any given country. A third latent group exists primarily in pre-capitalist economic formations that can be readily mobilized into the capitalist labor market. This includes the reservoir of proto-proletarians, including peasants, but this group also includes unwaged domestic laborers, as well as salaried professionals who are under threat of being returned to the proletariat, often through de-skilling. For example, medical professionals, lawyers, and academics. The importance of this group is that it forms an additional reservoir of labor for capitalism when existing labor markets are tight. Finally, in addition to the other strata, a vast number of people are considered economically inactive, including the discouraged, the disabled, and students. Overall, determining the precise size and nature of the global surplus population is difficult with existing data, and subject to fluctuations as individuals move in and out of categories. But a variety of measures converge to suggest it significantly outnumbers the active working class. This is the crisis of work that capitalism faces in the coming years and decades: a lack of formal or decent jobs for the growing numbers of the proletarian population. In an earlier generation, the identification of surplus populations as a problem was an idea that was often derided. During the quote-unquote golden age of capitalism, low unemployment, stable jobs, rising wages, and rising living standards meant the idea that capitalism produced a surplus humanity enjoyed little material support. Yet, while most leftist thinkers turned to the economic problems of growth for capitalism, an occluded intellectual tradition has instead emphasized the social reproduction problem of surplus populations. It is no surprise that it was often those outside the functioning capitalist order who saw the potential in this surplus class. Writing from Algiers in the 1970s, Eldridge Cleaver presciently argued that, quote, "When workers become permanently unemployed, displaced by the streamlining of production, they revert to their basic proletarian condition," unquote. And that, quote, "The real revolutionary element of our era is the proletariat," end quote. From the capitalist core, Paul Maddock called it, quote, "the most important of all capitalistic contradictions," unquote. And more recently, communization theorists have made important contributions to analyzing the crisis of wage labor. And Frederick Jameson has argued that Capital, presumably Marx's Capital, quote, "is not a book about politics, and not even a book about labor. It is a book about unemployment," unquote. Indeed, it is often forgotten that Marx argued that the expulsion of surplus populations, was part of the quote, "the absolute general law of capitalist accumulation," unquote. In the wake of the 2008 crisis and continued sluggishness in the labor market, it is no surprise that the issue of surplus populations should emerge again. With technological change proceeding apace, the already large numbers of surplus humanity look set to swell. The very social basis of capitalism as an economic system, the relationship between the proletariat and employers, with waged work mediating between them, is crumbling.